This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Last year, Mayo Clinic Health Systems' Franciscan Healthcare offices lost more than $6 million from unpaid bills by uninsured patients. Beginning in October, uninsured patients will be asked to pay a portion of their bill after they receive services. I talked with Chief Financial Officer Tom Tigelar about the new policy.
At no point in time for emergency care services are patients requested in advance of being assessed and treated, will they be asked about the financial obligations. For emergency services, those requests will always come after that treatment and that assessment and treatment has occurred.
So they won't have to worry, you know, if someone has broken their arm and they don't have insurance, it's not going to be brought up to them. Well, how do you plan on paying until that broken arm is fixed up?
The last question that will be asked, we will ask that after the assessment and treatment has occurred.
Because it probably helps out the patients as well as the treatment and that whole process, I'm assuming.
We want patients to be treated first in those situations. It's important that happens.
So how did that decision come? Obviously, there are many uninsured people in the area. Wisconsin, as far as the number of uninsured people in Wisconsin, we're doing better than most of the states in the country. But how was it decided that Mayo would start asking patients who are uninsured to pay a bit?
The discussion that we had is we have been engaging many more of our insured patients as high deductible health care plans and additional co-pays and other components are requested by our put into insurance plans that are offered by employers. We are requesting those kinds of co-payments and deductibles to be paid also in a request at the time of service or prior to, depending upon the location, whether it's emergency room or in our clinics and outpatient hospital facilities, that would occur as we're trying to work that schedule. As in the emergency case, obviously, it's always assess, treat, then we'll have a discussion. We are having that kind of conversation with our insured populations. We think it's ultimately as important to have that same kind of conversation with the uninsured population. As we engage in that conversation, we have been very successful in working with those patients to determine, do they qualify for other types of assistance? Be it, do they qualify for medical assistance? Is there a Social Security disability that we need to work with them to get them qualified for? Are there other charity care components that we have a pretty extensive plan on? Do they qualify for the charity care components? What methodologies are we using to help those patients be able to get the care that they need and work with them on those financial obligations? It is not meant to be a punitive thing. It is meant to be a far more assistive process in our implementation.
And can you talk about the costs associated? You said, you know, there are many different factors that are played in, but if someone visits an emergency room versus urgent care, can you talk about the different costs that you are asking uninsured people to pay?
It is always more advantageous to our patients to receive the care that they need, as long as it is not emergency-level care, to receive that care in a clinic setting and have ongoing continuity of care with a established relationship with a provider. That is always the best sequence that we could hope for, is that patients are cared for under a continuity plan with a provider, that they continue to see their physician on a consistent basis and get treated for those things and see that same provider or that same physician or nurse practitioner or associate provider on an ongoing basis. There's a relationship established there that's appropriate. And many of those instances can be treated in the clinic setting, which is the most cost-effective method for those treatments. When we see those kinds of visits migrate to an emergency room setting, the costs go up. That's always true. Now, people don't plan for emergencies. They can't be, they're not an appointment. We understand that, and we will always be there for the emergency needs of those patients through our emergency room. There is increased cost, though, in going to an emergency room as opposed to ongoing clinical care in a clinic setting with an established physician.
So have you set a cost for someone who wants to go to a clinic?
We have requested in our guidelines the request for payment that will be requested in an emergency room setting after assessment and treatment is going to be $100. In our clinic settings, we will be asking for $75, and in our outpatient hospital services, it would be $100. These types are very similar to what are normally requested in many of the insured policies.
And can you talk about the conversations that you do hope that this will conjure up within the uninsured population?
We hope that this will have that population group look at options that are available to them within applications for medical assistance, within Social Security disability coverage, the high-risk insurance plan run by the state. There are a number of options that we think will help patients receive better care with their physician on an ongoing basis. What we don't want to have are the catastrophic issues that occur sometimes because patients don't come on a routine basis for normal routine care, but then find themselves as a result of that in a catastrophic situation, be it cancer care or some other type of high-level care that we either could have prevented, or number two is worked with them up front to make sure that the financial obligations are and fears from that are allayed by working with them earlier in the process rather than after the care has already been received.
So were these conversations being had in the past? I mean, even up until 2-3 months ago, were financial options given to people who are uninsured when the time came that they had to check out and they were about to go home?
I would say that our delivery was less than optimal, which is why we are doing this in a more concerted manner and in an organized manner so that our staff have been trained. We make the appropriate referrals to our financial counselors to assist those patients that need that help.
I believe I read in the La Crosse Tribune's article that if someone could not pay, then
we will not be refusing treatment.
Sure.
Our discussion is a request. It is a request for payment, not a requirement for payment, but a request for payment.
Do you think that something like this could eventually lower costs for people who do have health insurance?
I believe it would assist in that process. To the extent that there is shifting of the uninsured or of the bad debt and uninsured obligations, those get paid ultimately from our patients and the insurance companies that serve them. So it is part of the rates that are out there, just like bad debts are part of any other business's cost of doing business. That's a part of our cost of doing business. If we can reduce that cost of doing business, can we in fact reduce the cost for the others? Yes.
Can you talk about how many uninsured people that Mayo Clinic, I guess back then it was Franciscan Skemp Clinics, how many uninsured people that you treated last year, and then of those people, how many actually paid for the services that they received?
One of the analysis that we completed in 2010 is that the organization served about 8,794 uninsured families. And as we look at that component, and there were some pretty large dollar amounts of charges, $6.6 million that were the charges for the services rendered to those, and our collection rate was approximately 7%, or $462,000.
So how does the hospital then make up that difference?
That difference becomes part of our charity care obligation and part of our bad debt, which, as we just described, is a part of the cost of doing business that is borne by all in this process.
So are there any doctors who are maybe worried about privacy issues with these changes, or is this all going to be just handled by people who handled the financial side and the business aspect of the hospital anyways?
This is going to be worked with our reception staff, and we have worked with them on training them how to ask for this and how to refer those patients on for additional counseling with our financial counselors to assist them in evaluating this. It is not a process that we envision occurring at our registration desks in a long, drawn-out discussion. It is going to be a request, and the scripting would point towards referral to our financial counselors for a more in-depth discussion.
Will any changes with the federal health care law be affecting the changes that you all are putting in place at all?
They may over time. It depends upon the final outcome of how federal services or how those programs will be enacted.
Since Mayo Clinic Health Systems is the first in this area to change the policy, is there any concern that patients could go elsewhere, and is there a want for patients to go elsewhere?
No, that is not our desire to ask patients to go elsewhere. Our desire is to engage those conversations and assist our patients, honestly. It is an assistive process, not one of punitive, and to push patients away. We still are true to our mission of serving the sick in our area and treating our patients. I think this will result in treating our patients better by discussing those financial obligations with them and working with them rather than ignoring them.
Tom Tiglar is Chief Financial Officer for Mayo's Franciscan Healthcare. He was talking about a policy that starts this weekend, where the regional health group will try to charge uninsured patients for medical care. You're listening to Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Scenic Bluffs Community Health Centers of Cashton and Norwalk exist to serve poor and uninsured patients. I asked Executive Director Mary Freiberg if she thought the changes the Mayo Clinic Health System was making could impact Scenic Bluffs.
The asking for payment isn't the issue, because that's what organizations that provide health services need to do. I think that the discussion is asking for it before or after, and what the health center model believes strongly in is making sure that people understand the cost of the services before they receive the services to the best of our extent. Of course, there's going to be times when labs are needed or there's follow-up services that may be required that we didn't anticipate before the patient walked in for the appointment. But generally, if you're on the sliding fee scale for the health center, the health neighbor plan, you'll have a good sense of how much it's going to cost you before you come in for services. And people who are lower income or uninsured can make decisions based on that, and making sure that those services are affordable. The health center model does not want cost to be a barrier to accessing services. We're not a free clinic, and so we do charge patients, but because we have the sliding fee scale, that's what makes the services affordable.
So do any of your referrals or follow-up cases come from The two major providers, at least in the La Crosse area now, from Gunderson Lutheran or from Mayo Health Clinic?
We will make referrals to the systems, and the systems will send patients our way as well. And so it's a you know, good interactive working relationship that we have with them. So the patients, when they move from Scenic Bluffs to the larger health systems, if they don't have insurance, there isn't the health center sliding fee scale does not follow them to the specialty services, and that's a significant barrier for a lot of individuals, because accessing primary care is what the health center does. We provide primary medical, dental, chiropractic, behavioral health services. We have a pharmacy on site, but it's all primary care. Once an individual moves to the level of needing specialty services, we will make the referral. But it is you know, the individuals who are choosing to go for that care often incur some pretty significant debt. Just an example of that is if an individual needs a colonoscopy, a diagnostic colonoscopy, that can run anywhere from $2,500 to $5,000, and that's a significant expense that people may or may not choose to manage. And so while we'll the health center is always trying to work with organizations and find grants, and, you know, to be able to support some specialty services for individuals, there's just not a lot of money and funding out there for anything more than primary care. And so the health center fits well into the primary care model. You know, when people don't have insurance and they need to go someplace, you know, the health center is happy to provide services for them. But once they sort of step up to the next level of needing a specialist, that's where the cost gets very significant for people very quickly. And there's a lot of individuals who will choose to forego the necessary specialty services because of the cost.
Some people, they can't afford to go to see a specialist, or maybe going into debt scares them. So how often do you see patients that just don't handle it?
We have people on staff at the organization who will work with individuals to try and get them into whatever programs we know exist. So we have sort of a case manager who will work with people to try and get them enrolled into any available program that we may know of. You know, they'll help with food share, Medicaid applications, if there's some, discounted prescription drug assistance programs. Our organization will work with people to try and get them on all of those things. I can't actually tell you the number of people because I'm not a clinician and I don't have that access to that information right in front of me. Well, and we don't track that, actually. But I do know that medical debt is the leading cause of bankruptcy in this country right now. And so I imagine that there's in Monroe, Vernon, and La Crosse counties, there's an awful lot of people who are choosing to forego that care.
I'm wondering if you can talk about whether or not the poor economy has created an increase in patients that you see at Scenic Bluffs.
The health center has certainly seen an increase in the number of patients that we've been serving over the last few years. We've seen a steady growth in the number of patients that we serve. Right now, last year we served about 7,000 different patients, and we provided about 20 to 22,000 patient visits in all of our services. So the patient base has been growing at about 10% a year. But what we're also seeing is a transition of people from an insured status to an uninsured status. And so what that does is takes patients from the ability to have their expenses paid by another organization to being self-pay. And we've seen an increase as well in the sliding fee scale discounts that the health center provides. We get a grant of about $800,000 a year, but last year we provided $1,000,001 in sliding fee scale discount services to patients. And so it's a significant budgetary impact. Our organization is about a $4.5 million business, and we provided $1 million in sliding fee scale discounts. So it's a growing number. The thing is, we cannot restrict access to the sliding fee scale by federal rule, and we would not want to because that is our mission. The health center exists to provide services to people who experience geographic and financial and cultural barriers to care, and so the sliding fee scale is absolutely a program that we're committed to, and we we will continue to extend that to any patient who qualifies for that.
Has the federal health care reform made a difference in the services you can provide or the way that patients can access your services, or do you expect it to in the future?
I'm a huge supporter of federal health care reform legislation and the bills that took effect. I think that the potential of wonderful things happening is very strong. I think it's too early in the process to know exactly what may happen. I think the possibility of more individuals with access to health insurance is a wonderful development when that happens. I think there's a lot of latitudes that the states have had to decide how they want to create the programs and how they're going to implement those in their states. I also think that you know, having health insurance does not mean that you have access to services, though. And so the health center, under federal health reform, the program received some increases in funding for expansions. Scenic Bluffs didn't receive any. We had, in fact, no one in the Midwest received any increases in expansion funding for health centers. And so a lot of the potential for expansions that came through health reform for health centers went to states that have more uninsured than the Midwest does. I think, though, too, the thing to remember is that in this part of the state, there's a lot of individuals whose, farm families whose incomes are just high enough where they have a high cost deductible, and so it's difficult to meet that deductible and very expensive if you have to spend $10,000 a year on primary care. So they have the catastrophic medical coverage, which is hugely important, but primary care can be an issue. About 9% of our patients are Amish. About 8% of our patients are new immigrants from Mexico and Guatemala. There's a good number of people who will never choose to participate in a health insurance program or be prohibited from participating in a health insurance program because of immigration status. Right now, off the top 17% of the health center's patient base, even if health reform takes effect and everybody has health insurance, we're still going to have 17% of the population that does not have health insurance, either by choice or by law.
Mary Freiberg is the executive director of Scenic Bluffs Community Health Centers. Coming up in the next half hour, a new web camera project will track efforts to restore the peregrine falcon on a bluff in the La Crosse area. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse.